things pretty quickly enough anyway to survive in talk radio. But I find quantum physics the kind of thing where you can just kind of read a couple of articles and go, oh, okay, I get that. So anyway, one thing that I discovered reading page one of the New York Times today was that I couldn't understand a word of that article. I think the article was written by some, you know, fancy pants science writer who was trying to impress other scientists with how well he understood all this stuff. But he wasn't writing it in a way that morons like me would find beneficial. So my first thing is, like, is Stephen Hawking just kind of sitting there in the wheelchair, you know, and, you know, a year goes by, another year goes by, and he suddenly just goes, wait a second, that's not what they do. I mean, how does he arrive at this kind of thing? How does he arrive? It doesn't seem like the kind of thing where the numbers were off. But I guess there are calculations involved. And I did a little bit more reading about this. From what I can figure out, it goes something like this. Your car keys are somewhere, all right? The fact that you can't find them right now, that doesn't mean that they're gone. Because, in fact, matter is preserved in some form. Matter and energy are preserved in some form. So even if your car keys are in a black hole, they're not completely gone. You may get them back at some point, although they probably won't be recognizable as car keys. They may look a little bit more like, I don't know, gas. Whereas Stephen Hawking had at one point said, you know, stuff goes into black holes, then come back out. I don't know where it goes. It may go to maybe an entire other universe, kind of, you know, sitting at the bottom of kind of a funnel in one of these black holes, and maybe everything goes there, and who knows, and that's why you can't find your socks. But he's now reversed himself. And according to some of the physicists who are being interviewed, everybody else had figured this out, you know, a couple of years ago, and Stephen was the only one clinging to this old idea. So I mean, it's probably ultimately the most significant thing going on today is how black holes work. I mean, compared to, you know, some of these other little nuancy things. But then it's hard to get a rousing discussion going about it. I concede that. But if you have anything that you want to say about black holes, it's 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC, *WTIC, those of you who don't consider the show itself to be a black hole. Joining us now is Jeff and his Well, the September 11th panel said that the greatest threat after Al-Qaeda is probably drunken German bicycling fans, which is to say, German bicycling fans. Oh, look at him, Hans. He is bicycling very fast. Let us spit at him. It's time for Sports à Trois, the very French sports discussion segment, avec Monsieur Arnoldin, myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer, and the very absent Bruce Steven.
I'm glad you picked up on that subject. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. Even in the front page of the sports section of The Current this morning, you see all the people who were standing there cheering. With the I think the fans perilously close.
Yeah,
The Lance
Armstrong. Let's put our feet where the bicycles are going, yeah.
And they're flapping their national flags in his face as he goes by, and some of the others as well. And here right in front of him, so he's actually in the line of his path, there's somebody with his thumb down to make sure he sees. You got thumbs down for me. But did you see the New York Post today? The headline is Sauerkrauts. German idiots spit on Lance, it says. And
that's why it's referred to as the New York Post, comma, a journal of ideas.
Is that what it's referred to?
That's the official,
I've never heard
the official trade name of the publication.
Not quite that one. Yeah. You want to hear mine? But, you know, it's nationalism is a wonderful thing, but from what I understand, you know, so many of the nations, so that they can conquer some of the hills,
right.
That's their term, before all these gifted athletes do.
Once they bring their leap from Milchalanga with them also, because it's very boring waiting for the bicycles to go by.
And then they go by so fast.
It's so much more enjoyable if you're hammered.
At least in Indianapolis, they go by fast, but they go back. You know, they go around it.
Only once each bicycle is going by. Wait and wait, and then the bicycle goes by. Then drink some more.
You're having one of those days.
Yeah.
It's Now, John from East Adam. Hi, John.
Hello. I have a question for you. I heard you say that Raiders jerseys have
Tug appeal.
Tug appeal.
Yeah.
And by a Terrell Owens jersey, it's idiot appeal.
Right.
Well, now, why would you say that about the best receiver in football?
Because he's an idiot.
That is the most idiotic statement I've ever heard.
No, yours is the most idiotic statement I ever heard. Mine is just my opinion. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I listened to you talk about the French or the Tour de France.
Right.
And then you talk about politics. You know about as much about both of them. I'll tell you, which is nothing.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's just your opinion, too, man, okay? Somehow or other, this turned into, like, WFAN for just a couple of minutes here. I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go back to our regularly scheduled program. You know, I want to go back to the Stephen Hawking thing, which will further make... Yeah, Jonathan, he's upset. I want to go back to the Stephen Hawking thing. So, my question... I have two questions. One of them is, what's he going to do? I mean, he's not, like, getting up every day and doing calculations. He's just sitting there in the wheelchair, and he's just thinking, and he's thinking, and he's thinking, man, that Terry Hatcher, she's got a great... Wait a second. You know, and then it's kind of... Then he's got the little thing where he types the one letter at a time out. You know, he has to type out, honey, and then it activates into a voice. It's a sort of a digitally activated voice. Honey, you know the thing out there that said about the black holes 30 years ago? Honey, could you come down here? And my other question is, does this mean that, like, Star Trek, all those Star Trek episodes and other kinds of science fiction episodes where somebody or something goes into a black hole and comes out on the other side into a universe, a different universe, that's really sunny and has, like, pink and yellow ponies hopping around in it and stuff like that, do they have to run a crawl underneath these episodes from now on whenever they rerun them on television? You know, a little crawl saying, actually, Stephen Hawking has subsequently repudiated the idea that the black holes have any other side to them or that matter goes anywhere. What would really happen is the spaceship would just sit inside the black hole for many eons and then it would get kind of spat back out in a very crumbled and unrecognizable state.
Then Colin shall return.
Well, you're afraid to talk about this one.
No, we're afraid to talk to you. You've been banned from Art Bell. Do you have any idea how deranged you are?
No, Bobby Sherwood just asked me.
You got kicked off the Art Bell show.
No, I wish I could have, but you never can get on there.
These are people he takes calls from people who've seen aliens licking themselves.
No, I never
And you got kicked off the Art Bell show.
No.
Do you own a home? Now you can refinance.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
I have a fashion question, and obviously no one here can answer it. Although you look very smart today. You look very snappy. That's a nice chemise you have on today.
What?
You have a nice shirt on. Your shirt looks very nice.
Stupid pullover shirt.
It's very nice.
It's
attractive design, and
it's a stripe.
It's lovely. So I don't mean to suggest that you're not a fashionable person.
Well,
Bobby is not a fashionable person.
I think we can pretty much rule all of us out.
Right.
I don't know. You're more...
Bobby dresses like he's auditioning for, like, the gas pump guy in Deliverance or something, and,
Want more this summer? Then get back.
Well, according to Arnold Dean, Miss Njami is battling with an intestinal parasite. I had not realized Steve Salhini was working for the Yankees right now. It's time for Sport à Trois, the very French sports discussion segment. Avec Mr. Arnold Dean, Michel Brousse-Direns, and myself, the weak ass Gun de la Mer.
You know, it kind of fits, too, because he said he was feeling listless.
That's true.
Yeah. Poor Steve.
All right, that's all we have time for. It's nice for you to join us.
I haven't seen him around here today, and here you're picking on him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
Joining us now from a distant galaxy, it's the Borg talk radio caller, Locutus.
Why are the Poodles' 1988 divorce records untouchable?
The Poodles?
Yeah, John Kerry.
Why do you call him the Poodle?
Because I hate the guy.
He doesn't look like a poodle.
He looks like an idiot.
Why do you call him the poodle? You haven't explained that.
The wimp factor for him is like the wimp factor.
He's a war hero. Plus, I just saw him on TV playing football and strangling an alligator with his bare hands. You know, that's the kind of thing somebody would like you would do. You're up there in your little spaceship. You're safe up there because nobody can get up to outer space and smack you around. But let me tell you something, mister. One of these days, you're going to run out of fuel, you're going to come down to Earth, and I'm going to kick your ass, all right?
I'm sorry to say that on the 4th of July holiday, but I'm going to personally kick your outer space ass.
Pet owners, save a...
Well, this is something that you provided me, and I thank you for it, because I'm eternally fascinated with the Dutch supermarket giant Royal Ahold. There's a new development here. They're going to announce charges today against four top executives of Royal Ahold in what prosecutors describe as a scheme to inflate earnings.
What would those executives be referred to as?
Executives. That's what we're
being referred to. Yeah, but I mean, would they
They would be like the top, the big A-hole people, you know.
That's kind of what I was looking
for.
Yeah. So they would be the biggest then?
They would be the biggest A-hole executives anyway in this area. And this all has to do with a U.S. Food Service Incorporated, which is an A-hole acquisition. It was not formally part of the A-hole circle, and it was acquired by them. And this is all in a scheme to inflate earnings and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, they will be punished. And by the way, this is not connected to those people up in Springfield, because I did find out about that. Anyway, we can't get into that now. Those are the Athelines. Remember those people?
Right.
Yeah, they're charged with corruption in Springfield. They have no connection to Royal Ale. All right, we have Leo King
from China, but a lot of the concepts are universal.
Yeah.
And it's really about, you know, using your environment to affect your life.
So I see, actually, over the course of the conversation we're about to have, some feng shui issues and perhaps some soul coaching issues too. Because here's the whole thing. Talk radio can be a force for good, but can also be a force for terrible negativity. And probably you turn on your radio sometimes and you think, I can't believe how negative things are. I can't believe how angry people are. So the question is, how do we, dare I say, manipulate this environment and me so that we don't become negative and angry?
Mm-hmm.
So, just in general, and I know that you don't want to do like a full-fledged feng shui diagnosis of this dump right here on the air.
That's actually very nice here.
Do you think you like it here?
I do.
All right.
I think if you were to think of one concept, it's you want to feel safe.
Yeah.
And so in order to feel safe, you need to know what's going on behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in a position right now, Colin, that...
I'm trying to be stronger. I'm sorry. So I don't feel safe right now because I don't know what's going on behind me.
Exactly. You have a glass door behind you, glass windows behind you, the entryway. Anybody could come in, and especially with your headphones, you wouldn't know it.
Okay. You're actually ratcheting up my fear levels right now by saying all that. If I vomit and pass out, you have to host the rest of the show.
Okay.
So Dan Rather's coming up. Don't forget that. So there shouldn't be like that. There should be...
Yeah, our basic needs...
Should I put some bamboo behind me, maybe?
Well, if you can't move the space, I mean, obviously you'd be better on the side that I'm on.
I usually do sit over where...
Okay,
and Bruce,
that'd be better.
Bruce, who is a simmering cauldron of fear, mm-hmm. Because he has no protection. But when I sit over there, I've got Bobby.
Yeah, it's
he's
still
against
not
the glass.
Good. It's still
and
not
Bobby doesn't
good.
Even like me very much, so that's a problem. In general, you're saying don't have your back exposed. It's more like mafia than feng shui somehow. But I guess there's just a general...
It's just a general feeling. I mean, it really goes back from our biology way back when we were in caves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to know what's happening behind you. You don't want to be surprised.
Yeah.
So if you can't avoid it,
mm-hmm.
it would be good to have, you know, a mirror or something, a small
mirror,
so you could see behind you.
Okay. Or how about just something to protect, like... How about bamboo? Bamboo's good. Like, it comes up in big stalks and stuff, and it...
You're going to have it in the middle of the hallway?
Well, just right here in the studio. How about having that nice little grove of bamboo around?
It's
organic. We have to go a little break. We're going to have to pursue this a little bit more.
Okay.
We're talking to Susan Pildes from the New England School of Feng Shui. We'll be back in a while.
Attention. Good time, bum time. I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here.
And joining us now, this is a real honor. It's a lot of fun, too. And he's been on the show before, but it's been a long time. Joining us now is CBS anchor Dan Rather. Welcome to our airwaves.
Delighted to be with you. Thank you very much.
You know, I only came up to you on Sunday. I was at the Shorenstein Center. You were doing this panel discussion with Brokaw, Jennings.
Oh, we had that quadrennial thing, whatever it was. Were you there for that?
Yeah, I was there, and you were in the food tent afterwards, and I never got over it. I was too shy, actually, to come over.
Oh, well, listen, next time.
But I wanted to just ask you a little bit about that. This is an opportunity for you and the other two network guys, plus Jim Lehrer, plus Judy Woodruff, to sit there in front of Arianna Huffington and Nancy Pelosi and Al Franken and God knows who else, and kind of compare notes and talk about the state of journalism in America right now, broadcast journalism. First of all, did you learn anything? Did you come away from that exchange changed at all?
Well, you always learn something in that kind of situation. And let me say good-naturedly but accurately that I wasn't sure that there was any hall in America big enough for all those egos at one time.
Exactly.
It turned out to be okay. I like to listen to the questions that are asked from the audience, and I think that I learned more from that than perhaps any other part of it. But it was interesting to hear, my friends and sometimes tough competitors, Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and others, talk about such things as pressures on coverage, everything from corporate pressure to partisan political and ideological pressure. We discussed it in our own newsroom. It was interesting to me to hear their take on that kind of thing. But, for example, the man from the audience who asked about perspective and context for me, things like the Jon Stewart program on television, which spoofs television news. That was a very perceptive question about, well, how do you on the CBS Evening News strive to reach younger viewers? I learned a lot from that question.
Yeah, that was an interesting question. Although, one of the things that I think is that one of the reasons that young viewers may gravitate towards a Jon Stewart is they're looking for something that they recognize as authenticity. And their idea of authenticity probably at this point is somebody who's not afraid to make fun of or call into question, a statement that's just been made and poke fun at it. And yet you have to sort of hew to a different set of standards. And it may be hard to communicate a sense of authenticity. They may look at Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw or Peter Jennings and say, well, they can't really say what they're really thinking.
Well, I recognize that some young people may think that way, but quite honestly, and I speak here only for myself, Tom and Peter have to speak for themselves. Young people turn to the Stewart program partly because they want to be entertained. They want to be informed, but also want to be entertained. And it comes at a time of day, it's repeated at night and it starts at night. Quite honestly, young people are generally busy with other things at the time the major national newscasts come across. I don't think much of the young audience is available to us most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Probably true.
That the news audience we know demographically tends to be an older audience. So quite honestly, I think anywhere where their attention can be focused on the future of the country and what's happening politically, whether it's with Jon Stewart, a tremendous talent in an entertainment context, or on the evening news, it's probably a good thing. As they get older, mature, get children of their own, get families of their own, and spending more time at home, they'll gravitate toward national newscasts. I feel confident about that.
I could hear ambient Fleet Center noise in the background. I've got to be thinking that last night, when Barack Obama gave his speech, it must have been a little bit frustrating that you weren't coming back live after that to talk about it, because it did feel like kind of a watershed moment that maybe we might be talking 10 years from now about the first time everybody heard Barack Obama.
Well, I think that may be true, that 10 years from now we may be talking about the first time anybody heard him, and I recognize some in the audience, today may not, we're talking to, may not have heard him. But, keynote speeches in recent years have been pretty bland. Mm-hmm. This was by far the best keynote speech in, 10, 12, 15 years. That may be the damning with faint praise.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the, it's rare that you see such good content delivered so effectively. Sometimes a person will have an excellent speech but gets up at the podium and sort of falls flat. So it was the combination. The other thing is he, better than anybody at the convention, including former President Bill Clinton, who's an excellent orator, I thought that Senator Obama put right in the bullseye what the Kerry Edwards ticket needs, and that is a direct appeal to those voters who in the past have voted for John McCain, Ross Perot, or the so-called Reagan Democrats in the 80s. That is, independent and swing voters who get a little tired of hearing the traditional Republican or Democratic fare. And this young man, as he describes himself, this tall, skinny kid with the big ears and the hard-to-pronounce name, really delivered big time on that. He's got a, you know, his future's unlimited. I can't say that he'll wind up being president someday, but that possibility is now open to him now, as is the possibility of being on somebody's ticket in the future as a vice presidential nominee. Now, as for frustrations, you know, listen, I like to be on the air as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. But, and I wish we were on the air more often this week, but it's pretty hard to make a case with these conventions anymore as being news.
Mm-hmm.
And that occasionally you get a surprise moment, such as Senator Obama really cracking through on screen. But these are scripted infomercials that we're dealing with the conventions these days. And so no one should be surprised that news organizations such as ours cut back on their coverage. We've expanded our coverage of the campaigns as a whole. But on conventions, because they're so tightly scripted and usually, most often, nothing surprising happens. Well, you know, we cover what are supposed to be the big speeches. President Clinton on Monday night, John Edwards tonight, John Kerry tomorrow night. But am I sorry that we missed the Obama speech? You bet.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you're right that they're scripted. You're right that they're infomercials. Although I've seen what you've done in the past. I even remember being on the floor in 1980 at Madison Square Garden and seeing you huddling with Terry Drinkwater and Harry Reasoner and Ed Bradley and whoever else you had down on the floor there. Because in the middle of all that scripting, you guys go out and report stuff. You get on the floor. You pull people aside. You say, what the hell is really going on here? I mean, you don't really have to report on the podium all day long.
Well, that's true, and what a good memory you have. The 1980 conventions, both Republican and Democrat, were the last conventions where anything important was actually being decided at the convention. And you're quite right that there was plenty of news to report in 1980 because Senator Ted Kennedy was making a run on an incumbent president, Jimmy Carter, who did not come to the convention with enough delegate votes assured for nomination. So we did a lot of digging around and reporting and could break stories. Certainly the convention was scripted to a degree, but it had an unscripted component that was important, mm-hmm. and that is Kennedy going to be able to build enough momentum to take the nomination away from incumbent President Carter or not? That's a big, important story, and it was being decided at the convention. At nearly every convention since then, I would argue every convention since then, and certainly the conventions this year, there's nothing important being decided.
You know, I thought it was an interesting moment for Obama last night. It was sort of a gutsy thing to do. He kind of talked right at the pundit class in almost sort of a Jesus style, or some, sort of a, an alas for you, lawyers and Pharisees and hypocrites. He said something about the pundits, and he said, you know, and then he challenged the whole red state, blue state thing. You know, he really sort of...